This is Chelsea Barrett inviting you to join me in the Jazz Room with host Joan Watson Jones.
Hello, welcome to the Jazz Room. I'm your host, Joan Watson Jones. Thanks for stopping by. Come in, relax, enjoy some great jazz. Each week we present the music of independent jazz artists, as well as those we've grown to love through the years. And yes, of course, the legends. Today we welcome saxophonist Chelsea Barrett. We met briefly after her set at the Pittsburgh International Jazz Festival. We'll talk about her CD, In Faith. We've opened with Brouhaha from that album, In Faith. Enjoy. Welcome, Chelsea Barrett, to the Jazz Room.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's so great to hear you here at the Pittsburgh International Jazz Festival.
Thank you.
You're a Pittsburgh girl.
I am, yeah, born and raised.
Born and raised. All right. So you've had a real interesting journey. I was doing a little, reading about you. Tell us, when you started getting into the music and all that.
I was really into the music from a young age, and what really got me started is I remember I was in, I think, the fourth grade, and the high school jazz band came around, and they gave a performance at the elementary school. And my experience with this was like, it was as if every day of my life before that day, I was like half asleep, and colors weren't that bright, and life didn't have any purpose. And the second I saw the jazz band performing, it was like I woke up and I snapped into consciousness and I was like, whoa, that's what I want to do for the rest of my life. So I do have to give a lot of credit to, like, I come from Upper St. Clair Township, and I have to give a lot of credit to how the arts and music program was back when I was a student there. I had really amazing teachers named Glenn Wayland and Frank Eisenreich, and they were just absolutely instrumental in, like, from an educational standpoint and within the public school system, for pouring into us. Like, Glenn Whalen started an extracurricular after-school jazz improvisation class in the middle school. And that's normally, like, curriculum-wise, something you would do in the high school. So, and then Frank Eisenreich introduced me to Sean Jones, basically, when he moved into town and sent me out to my first jam session at the Crawford Grill. He said, you guys need to go to the Crawford Grill tonight. Sean Jones is playing a gig and Roger Humphreys is running a jam session. So that's how I kind of got injected into the scene. And from there, it was really just, you know, Roger and everybody else also pouring into me very much and just showing a lot of support to young musicians.
When you went to high school,
yeah,
what? How did everything continue?
Well, it basically continued. Glenn Whelan and Frank Eisenreich are very close friends, so they had a thing where, you know, they'd be looking for who's coming out of the middle school and going to be qualified to be in like the varsity high school jazz ensemble. So it continued with me like joining the jazz ensemble and, you know, continuing doing like small group and large ensemble work within my school. But I think just having a teacher who was like, you know, there's only so much I can do for you when it comes to actually playing jazz, and really him saying, you need to go out, you need to meet Sean Jones and Roger Humphreys and all these other incredible musicians who are in the scene and let them take it from there, basically.
How did the rest of the life fit in with the jazz? The rest of your life fit in with the jazz? If you know, you still had school, you still were a teenager.
Yeah, I mean, I had a very interesting life as like a grade school age student, like middle school and high school. I was really into sports. I was into horses. I rode horses, and I just had a very kind of, I would call it like, not just suburban, but kind of rural life. I was really into the woods and the quiet and everything. So it was a big change to like say, oh, you want to go be a musician and be in this very cacophonous kind of lifestyle and environment to do everything. But I just knew, like, I had been bitten by the bug, and it wasn't really about how are you going to make music fit into your life. It was like, how are you going to make your life fit around this music? And it just,
yeah.
I just made very drastic changes like my last year of high school, because it came to a point where it was like, are you going to be a scientist? Are you going to be this? Are you going to be a musician? And you had to pick one kind of at that point. And I was like, I think I'm going to pick music.
Here's another cut from that CD in Faith titled 601.
Thank you.
Now tell us about your CD, Faith.
My CD in Faith. I started working on that in, like, right when I first moved to New York. It was right when I met Maurice Brown. I had been playing with his best friend, Corey Wilkes, who's another amazing trumpet player. He was, like, the first trumpet player who played with my band back then. I had set up a great band to go in the studio and record In Faith. And I already met Maurice in passing a couple times, but Corey said, I'm going to invite Maurice to the studio. You know, Maurice is really good in the studio. I don't know if you know this about him, but he's like kind of an aspiring producer at the time, right? So Maurice comes in, he sees I have a great band of musicians. I had some Pittsburgh cats in there, some New York cats. I had all my music written out and arranged and everything. And the only thing I didn't have a concept was how do you manage your time in a studio? Like, how do you get like 10 or 11 songs recorded in one day? And Maurice came in and heard us do one take of one song, and he was like, this is great. I think you just need me to structure your time for you. And that's how we started our like relationship working on music together and kind of our collaborative and producer-artist relationship, and really became a mentor to me. But that was, Maurice was probably the most instrumental part of me working on In Faith, because I didn't have the experience to get everything out that needed to be expressed on that CD. It really took somebody with a producer's mindset and a visionary mindset to bring that to life.
I'm just going to interrupt for a minute. What's your Chihuahua's name?
Oh, this is King. And he is a Chihuahua Yorkie mix. I love the breed name Chorky.
Chorky. Oh.
Just rolls off the tongue.
He's adorable because he was licking my ear earlier. And we will probably have a photo on the Jazz Room website with you and...
Yeah, with me and King. I love it. King is my soul dog, and I adopted him about 5 years ago. And if you ever see me on the road, either as a side woman or with my own band, you are very likely to meet King in person.
Well, it's so nice to meet you, King. Yes. Okay, now, did you write all the music on In Faith?
I did, yes.
Now, we will be playing cuts from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to giving you this information so you can send me
mm-hmm.
the tracks. Tell me some of your, what songs are very close to your heart that you wrote that are in
On In Faith?
Yes.
I would say all those songs are super close to my heart, because kind of the process of being a composer is like, you'll write a lot of music, but not all of the songs will kind of make it to see the light of day. It's got to be the ones that kind of are musically stronger and also kind of mean more to you, because I think when something means a lot to you, it's going to be a more musically strong statement. So it just meant a lot to me to have these songs on In Faith, and they all mean a lot to me. They all came from kind of life-changing and life-affirming experiences that went into like launching yourself into being a young adult on your own, and being a young musician on your own, and kind of learning about love and heartache. And
give me specific songs.
Oh, specific
give
songs.
Give me a background from that song, since they're all part of
yeah.
you. Then you can tell me.
Well, I'd say the main one was Letting Go. Just the concept of that, like, being able to let go and let God when you have a big loss or you have a big challenge in life. And, you know, letting go is not always a bad thing. I think it's like forgiveness. You know, people talk about forgiveness. Oh, why would you forgive that person? And really, forgiveness is not about you letting somebody who hurt you get off. It's about you letting go of something so you're able to move on and fill that space with something more meaningful in your life. And I think letting go was probably one of the earliest and most meaningful tunes I wrote, because I really sat down in that headspace and that heart space of having felt loss and having felt out of control. And it's like when you're young like that and you've been sheltered and living with your parents and your family your whole life, you don't understand what it's like to have to go through major losses and challenges and not be able to do anything about it or not have a support system to be like, hey, can you go make this better for me? And yeah, to really sit with that. So yeah, letting go for sure.
Listen now to that tune, Letting Go. Song?
Let's see. I've got the track listings.
All right, let's do that, because while you're doing that, this gives my audience a chance to have insight to the tracks that I play.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm asking, and I'd like, and I'm saying this, you know, on our recordings, so that people know. I want people to know about you through your music.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Well, I would say the title track is a very important song. In Faith is all about moving forward in faith when you don't know whether or not something is going to kind of work out. And that was what moving to New York was like for me. Like, I knew I had kind of outgrown Pittsburgh in a way that it wasn't really pushing me outside of my comfort zone the way that I wanted it to. And that's no slight to the scene here, because there's always been an incredible scene of people who have, like I said, poured into me, supported me, and taught me a lot. But I wanted to go to a scene that was bigger and would push you farther. And it was kind of terrifying to drop everything in life and pick up and move to New York. You know, I had some personal circumstances that made me want to leave the school I was at, and kind of spurred me to make that move. But it really did take a lot of, like, what am I doing? Can I trust myself to do this? And moving forward and learning how to trust yourself. And Sentiments of Solitude was one of the first ballads that I ever wrote. And at the time, I had met Branford Marsalis. I was always a huge Uber fan of Branford when I was a young student in high school and college. So I got to meet him when he was on tour once and had gone to, like, Penn State or something, and a group of students from my school went and saw him. I remember asking him for a lesson and him being like, all right, fine, I'll give you a lesson. And I went down to his house in North Carolina to meet him. I actually had a family friend who lived a few doors down, kind of helped me stay down there for a few days. But we talked about music a lot in that hang, and Branford put me on to a poet named Rainer Maria Rilke. And Branford started talking about, like, life stuff with me, about how when you go on the road, you have to be so dedicated to that. And then when you come home, you have to, like, totally switch gears and, like, make time for your family and your wife and your baby. And he drove home the point of, like, this is a kind of lonely lifestyle. But he's like, there's a difference between feeling loneliness and embracing solitude. And he told me about this Rilke quote that was like, if you really love somebody, you'll be the guardian of their solitude. And I think that just really hit me as a really young person, like a young teenage college student who's like, I don't even know how to be alone with myself and enjoy solitude. And I really explored that in the time of, you know, experiencing one of my first heartbreaks and starting to really enjoy the process of being in solitude and what you can accomplish when you're kind of in stillness with yourself and your spirit.
Now tell us a little bit about your musicians with you today here at the Pittsburgh International Jazz Festival.
Oh, this is a story here today. And I just want to start it off by saying everybody who was on the stage with me today at the gig. They're all very close friends and people I hold very dear. But I will say we had some unplanned things happen that went into our personnel situation today. But I'll start off by saying I have my very special surprise guest, Maurice Brown, on trumpet come in and play with us today. I'm incredibly honored that he came and made the time to come in because he's got an incredibly busy touring schedule. So it's always a treat to have him and his energy imbued into the music. On the keys, I had my longtime bandmate, Takahiro Izumikawa. He's an incredible Japanese keyboard player. He's a Japanese Blue Note artist, and he writes incredible original music. I definitely recommend anybody go check his stuff out. And he's just really important to me in my band, and kind of plays almost that like musical director role, because he's the one person there who like knows all my music without looking at a piece of paper type of vibe. So on the drums today, I wasn't able to have my normal longtime drummer. I have a drummer named Joe Blacks that's been playing with me for over 15 years. And I got a chance to play with an amazing young drummer who I first met when he was a Berklee student. And his name is Brian Richburg Jr. I actually met him when we were performing with a harpist I play with named Brandy Younger. And that was my chance getting, it was the kind of gig where they're putting some like Berklee students together with some pro musicians from New York and a collaborative thing. And that was my first chance getting to play with him. And I've seen him graduate and move to New York and start to kind of take over that scene as a young drummer. And this was my first chance getting to have him play my music. So it was a really great opening experience for us to start building that relationship. And then on bass, I was supposed to have Ben Williams today, who was also supposed to play with Jose James. I love Ben. Ben and I moved to New York at the same time. We've been really close friends for a long time. And I've been touring with his band for probably the past 4 years more heavily. And Ben had, like, the flight that was supposed to get him to his layover in Chicago had a mechanical failure, so he was not able to make the flight. Now, in my tenure of playing with Ben, one of the amazing musicians that I've gotten to play with a lot on his gig is Julius Rodriguez, who we know is an amazing keyboard player. But a lot of people don't know, Julius is also a bass player, a guitar player, a drummer. He's an incredible producer and composer. He does everything. And I got the text message from Ben as the flight landed in Pittsburgh. And I looked around the plane like, do I see any bass players here? And I turned around at Julius in first class behind me. And I woke him up and I said, hey, do you want to play bass on my gig? And that's how it went down.
All right. That's what you got to do.
And he did an amazing job. I mean, anytime I've ever played with Julius, he's a very special individual who like immediately raises the level of the music. So for him to come in and have never heard my music before, I sent him a Dropbox with charts and MP3s. He learned the whole set in about an hour. And I thought the experience of getting to play with him, because he played keyboard bass and electric bass. And I don't usually play with keyboard bass. That's a very new format for me. So given that everything was pretty stressful, I thought it was a really unique and gratifying musical experience, and I'm kind of glad that it worked out the way it did.
Well, you know, I know jazz the way I understand jazz, just yep. like you. And if you have musicians of a certain caliber, you just go, okay, can we do this? Sure. And then you just go do it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And that's the way it is. Well, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
Oh, Chelsea, this was very delightful. You and King.
Thank you.
He's just such a love. Thank you so much for spending time here with us in the Jazz Room.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Here is Sentiments of Solitude. Thank you. come to the end of another show. Thank you for spending time here with us in the Jazz Room. You may see photos of Chelsea Barats and her little dog, King, and many more artists on the Jazz Room page of my website, JoanWatsonJones.com. Until next time, you've been in the Jazz Room. I'm your host, Joan Watson Jones.